Welcome into the Towel Boys with Tyler Bischoff and Mike Grimala. Mike over at runrev.com. I'm over here at Mountain West Connection. Got a name. Oh, it's good to say the name right off the bat, Mike.
And it's such a great name. I mean, it is. You gotta get that out front.
I am proud that one of us came up with something good. But UNLV, three straight wins. They're now 4-5 in conference play. Let's talk about the standings a little bit. Also, their zone offense, which has looked really bad at times the last few games. And, of course, we're going to talk about Danley Walker because if he had only played 12 seconds, we probably would have talked about Danley Walker today. Always going to talk about Danley. But looking at the standings, 4-5, they're in eighth place. They're only one game behind Utah State and Fresno State, who are tied for sixth. And they're only a game and a half behind Boise State, who's in fifth place. So let me ask you this, though. UNLV is slowly climbing up the standings, and they're in a position where they could actually pass some of these teams in the next week or two and be in decent shape for the conference tournament. But is UNLV actually better than they were 2 weeks ago, or is it just because they're playing Utah State, Nevada, and Air Force?
They've played the bottom half of the league. Definitely plays into it a little bit. Offensively, I think they've, aesthetically anyways, I think they've gotten incrementally better from the beginning of the season to now. I think they're playing a little better on that side of the ball. Defensively, I guess still a work in progress. They really still don't have an identity. I don't know if they would say that they're better. They've won. Maybe they're just learning how to win. Maybe that's what's happened in the past three games. Maybe they've learned how to win these games.
God, I hate you, Mike.
No, I don't. I wouldn't say that they're leaps and bounds better, but you have to beat the teams in front of you. So I mean, they're winning these games. You give them credit for that, and you just wait until their next test against which I guess would be Saturday at Colorado State to see if they've actually made any real tangible improvements.
Yeah, and Dave Rice is whatever. I think he said 12 times he's excited to have a week off, and I'm sure they need a week off after. They had a tough stretch and finally won their way out of losing. But you mentioned the offense. In conference play only, they're the third most efficient offense in the Mountain West. Like, it's a reversal of what they did in non-conference. In non-conference, their defense was pretty good. Their offense was awful. But in conference play, their offense has actually been really good. But defensively, they're eighth in the Mountain West in defensive efficiency in conference play. Like, their defense has just gone to hell since conference play started. So they've kind of switched that. The offense looks better, but when I don't really think they're a whole lot better. I think they're marginally better just because you play worse teams. You're able to dictate stuff more. You know, you play San Diego State at San Diego State, you don't get to dictate really anything, even if you are winning the game. But you get to play teams like Air Force at home and you can control the majority of the game. I don't think they're better, but they've won three straight, and they're in a much better position now at 4-5. Where do you think they end up? End of the season, conference standings, or seed in the Mountain West tournament? Where do you think they are?
I think they can catch Fresno State, which and Utah State, both of them, the next two teams ahead of them in the standings. I think they're as good as Boise State, probably. I don't know if they can catch them in the standings. I think they're probably a better team. Say fifth, I guess. I'm not sure they're going to catch New Mexico or Colorado State. Fifth would be my guess. Seems likely. If they can pass Boise State, that would be where I would figure them in right now.
Yeah, I would peg them at fifth, too. I think at the end of the year, that's where they'll be. Fresno State's not good. They've got a decent conference record, but they're not good. They feasted on some lower teams. Utah State, I think they'll fall off too in the next couple weeks. So I think UNLV is almost a lock for at least six. They're going to get a bye in the Mountain West tournament. And I think they'll catch Boise because they get Boise at home. I think they'll win that one. And then, you know, I think UNLV, they'll probably go something like 6-3 the rest of the way, which would put them at 10-8 overall. And I think that puts them ahead of Boise. Maybe they're tied with Boise and they lose the tiebreaker. But I think they do end up fifth. I think there's a chance they could end up third, though. I don't think it happens, but I think they could conceivably catch New Mexico, could conceivably catch Colorado State, more particularly New Mexico than Colorado State, but I don't see that happening. But I think it is plausible, and it's not, you know, they're two games behind those teams right now, and there's nine to play, so it's not like that's crazy. But I don't really see that happening. I think fifth is where they end up.
Obviously, they'd have to beat Colorado State this Saturday for that to happen, for any chance of that happening.
Yeah, and, you know, for UNLV, I think what it's going to come down to, if this team has any hope of, like, hey, maybe we can get ourselves on the bubble by winning a couple conference tournament games, or, you know, where their seating is in the conference tournament, it's going to come down to their second and third to last conference games, which is Wyoming at home and San Diego State at home. If they lose both of those, they're not going to be ahead of Boise. They could potentially be the 7 seed or worse, and they have no at-large chances whatsoever. If they were to win both of those, then all of a sudden, okay, maybe they find themselves on the very cusp of the bubble, and they might even be the 4 seed in the conference tournament or something. But I think those two home games is really where it is. A split kind of puts you in no man's land, but that is where UNLV could make up a lot of ground or the season just completely fall apart.
Yeah, it's those two games sort of looming at the end of the schedule. You basically have to win out leading up to that in order to sort of build your resume up to that point. I mean, I don't see it happening. I think they're still, end of the day, win the Mountain West tournament is their only chance still. I mean, we've been saying that for a few weeks, but I think it's still true.
Yeah, I think at this point, I would say if they won the rest of their games and won, got to the conference tournament championship and lost, I think they could be an at-large potential there. But other than that, I think they do have to win the conference tournament. Now, looking at the zone offense, because UNLV's faced a lot of zone, and against Air Force, their first 5 possessions, UNLV shot 5 threes. In the first half, I think they shot 17 threes compared to 11 two-pointers. What do you make of their zone offense so far?
I think that we've seen some improvement over the course of the season. I know I've seen them run some zone plays that, you know, are specifically installed to combat zone defenses that we haven't really seen in past years. I think Ryan Miller gets some credit for that. I think Rice has mentioned him as a guy who works with them on their zone offense. So we've seen more of an emphasis on beating the zone. It's been better than in past years. I'd have to look at the update.
Has it been bad in past years? Like, have they been really bad against zone?
I would say the 2 years ago was my first year. The Anthony Bennett year was pretty bad against zone. Last year was better. It was not negligible, but they were almost as good against man as they were against zone. And I don't know the updated synergy stats to up to date, but I think they're pretty good against zone this season.
They're better against zone than man so far this year.
The last time I checked, it had been that. It was something like 82 points per 100 possessions against man, and then it was 90-something per 100 possessions against zone. So last time I checked, they were better against zone, actually, than they were against man. And a lot of that is because they're shooting more three-pointers and making more against zone.
So here's the problem that they have against zone defenses, and the reason teams have begun to just zone them almost exclusively, is because they really struggle getting the ball anywhere near the basket, whether it's penetration, whether it's post up, whatever. They don't get to the basket against zone. I mean, Rashad Vaughn against man-to-man can get within 5 feet of the basket kind of whenever he wants. Cody Doolin can do it off a ball screen, so can Pat McCall. You know, Chris Wood can get a post up, or he can drive against man-to-man. but none of that really works against zone defenses. And, you know, we saw it to start the game. It was pass it around the perimeter pretty much the first 5 minutes of the game and then take a three. They got a lot of open threes because they were moving the ball pretty well, but there was no threat of getting to the basket. And against Air Force, who was a lot smaller, that's kind of where UNLV could have thrived and really hurt them early on. But second half was much different. And Pat McCall said after the game that Coach Miller got onto them for shooting too many threes, and Dave Rice alluded to working inside out to get the threes. First five possessions of the second half, Cody Doolin drove into the paint, Rashad Vaughn drove into the paint, Chris Wood drove into the paint, and Chris Wood got a post-up touch, all against the zone defense. They were much better in that second half.
And those are all dribble drives, just guys putting it on the floor and driving to the basket?
Yeah, three of them were dribble drives, and then one was a post-up to Chris Wood that, if I remember, came off of a baseline inbounds, but I'm not sure about that. But yeah, in the first half, UNLV had pretty good ball movement, but nobody was looking to dribble in to get into the lane or anything. In the second half, they started out with the same type of ball movement, but when somebody caught it on the wing with space, they would try to take it into the paint and then kick out. And, you know, I think Pat made a three on the first possession, Rashad made a three on the third possession. It all came off of somebody getting in the lane. If they can continue that, I think their zone offense will be fine. It may not be great, but it'll be fine. But I still think there's a lot of worries when they play a team that can maybe close out better than Air Force or can keep them from dribbling past the perimeter of that zone a little bit better than Air Force can.
Yeah, we've seen them take a few different approaches to the zone throughout the year. We've seen them try different guys, you know, in the middle of the zone as, you know, facilitators. We've seen them go three heavy. And then last night, the emphasis, I guess, after halftime was, you know, driving the ball into the paint and, you know, trying to make the defense. Is it that simple? Is it just a matter of getting guys, you know, inside the defense and creating some sort of movement? Is it that simple? What should they be? What do you think? What have you seen?
To me, they've got three things that they do pretty well, and it's kind of looks like it's just their overall scheme against zones, is they run baseline screen stuff. We saw it for Dantley when he hit his three, but they do it a lot for Pat and Rashad. They do that pretty well, except they don't always get quality screens when they run through those on the baseline. But then whenever they get a guy at the free throw line, Pat's probably been the best at it this year. They're really good. And last night, actually, they had a couple good possessions in the first half when they would get the ball to the guy in the short corner. It was mainly Good Luck Okonobo, but I think even Cody Doolin had a possession where he was there for some reason, and that just collapsed Air Force's zone. When they got the ball to the short corner, that's where all the focus went, and all of a sudden the perimeter was wide open, and that created some open threes. So I think they've got a couple places where if they can get the ball, the zone offense is really good because it starts to break down the defense. So I think if they focus on getting Pat to the free throw line, getting somebody in the short corner and looking to facilitate from there, they'll be pretty good. The other thing is, we didn't see them last night, but we've seen throughout the year, like you mentioned, some good zone plays that have worked. I think we only saw one or two set plays against a zone last year or last night. And it was none of the really good ones that they ran early in the year. So I don't know. It doesn't always look good, and the fans start moaning and complaining, but the zone offense hasn't been bad because when you're shooting a lot of threes, that's still a pretty efficient shot if you're going to knock them down at 33% or whatever UNLV shoots as a team.
Yeah, this is, in the past few years, this is the best shooting team that they've probably had in terms of being able to put multiple shooters on the floor. Maybe no one is, you know, lights out except, you know, Dantley. But when you've got Doolin, McCaw, Vaughn, those guys all on the floor at the same time, even Kendrick a little bit when he's, you know, if he's open. Not every three-pointer is a bad shot. I mean, obviously you don't want to shoot, you know, three-pointer on your first 10 possessions against the zone just because you can. But if you're open, a three-point shot is a good shot. If you're open and you're in the corner and you're at the top of the key, it's probably, besides a layup, it's probably the best shot.
It was so awesome to hear everybody moaning about how many threes UNLV was taking last night. And then as soon as Dantley Walker comes in the game, it's, oh, my God, shoot it.
When he gets one step across half court, if it's for him, launch it.
Like, UNLV could have been 0 for 20 on threes, and everybody in the stands could have been yelling to fire Dave Rice right there because they're shooting too many threes. But as soon as he puts Dantley in, more threes. We want every shot should be a three from here on out from Dantley. It was tremendous.
What did you think of his stint? Did you expect that from him in that spot? Did you expect him to see those kind of minutes in that situation?
I thought Jordan Cornish shot Dantley Walker out of any chance of playing this year. Because the way Jordan Cornish, and now he was 0 for 4 last night shooting, but the way Jordan Cornish is shot, there's really been no need to bring in Dantley Walker because Jordan Cornish has shot just as well as Dantley probably would have in the past few games.
52% going into the game for Cornish.
Yeah, and Jordan Cornish isn't quite the defensive liability that Dantley Walker is and brings a little bit more offensively, even though he's had some really bad transition opportunities so far this year. But I honestly thought Jordan Cornish shooting the ball as well as he had meant we weren't going to see Dantley Walker unless it was a blowout. Cornish struggled shooting a little bit last night. I think he only played 8 minutes. So we saw Dantley. I wasn't expecting him to play. And I don't know. Dave Rice said after the game that he thought the 4 minutes Dantley played at the end of the first half completely changed the game. And he thought that was the turning point. He had the assist and then had a three in the final minute that kind of gave UNLV their 5-point halftime lead. Did you think it was Dantley Walker that made the difference and swung that game for UNLV?
He definitely gets the crowd into it. There's no question about that. Whenever he comes into a game, you feel that energy at the Thomas and Mack Center that you don't normally see, you know, for these types of, you know, these non-marquee games. So, like, when he comes in, you can feel a little bit of an energy surge. And it came up in the press conference last night. McCaw sort of confirmed it and talked about it a little bit, that his teammates seem to love him so much, almost as much as the fans do, that when he's in there, you know, it sort of gets their energy up a little bit. And when he comes in and he makes that assist, you know, and then even the team, you know, running a play for him at the end of the half, sort of a personal 5-point swing there for Walker with the assist and then the three-pointer. That was a tie game, and then he sent him into halftime with a 5-point lead. That, you know, that I could see that definitely swinging the momentum a little bit.
The assist was awesome.
The assist was great. The catches in the corner. Someone on Air Force had read the scouting report, closed out very hard on Dantley Walker. He's the pump fake, one dribble, hit Kendrick underneath. Very nice.
Is Dantley in the scouting report just can shoot? He's just one line, number 30, Dantley Walker, can shoot.
He doesn't take up much space on the scouting report, but he's got to be on there saying, you can't leave this guy open.
Here's Dave. So Dave Rice said Dantley Walker changed the game, swung the momentum, all that. I went back and rewatched Dantley Walker's 4 minutes, and Dave Rice completely undersold either himself or his coaching staff because basically here's what happened. UNLV was getting zoned. They weren't doing a great job scoring against the zone in the first half. So Dave Rice puts in Dantley Walker, who's sort of a natural zone buster. I'm a little surprised Air Force didn't go man-to-man as soon as Dantley came in. But what Air Force did do, they went 1-3-1 as soon as Dantley Walker came in. And the lineup that UNLV had on initially, Dantley Walker and Pat McCaw were really the only two ball handlers on the floor. So those were the two guys kind of breaking down that 1-3-1 half-court trap. Didn't work very well the first couple possessions. After two possessions, Dave Rice got some subs in, and his lineup was Pat McCaw, Dantley Walker, Rashad Vaughn, Jalon Kendrick, and Dwayne Morgan. Super small, no real big man, and what that allowed UNLV to do, Rashad Vaughn and Pat McCaw broke down the half-court trap, and Dantley Walker just stood in the corner. And that is the weakness of the 1-3-1. That's UNLV, when they run the 1-3-1, that's their big weakness, is the corner. And it's brilliant to put him in the corner against the 1-3-1. I don't know why you would run a 1-3-1 zone with Dantley Walker on the floor, but they just stuck him in the corner, and that's how he got his assist. That's how he got his first three that he missed, and then he got the three that he made because he ran from one corner off baseline screens to the other. Well, I guess he shot it from the wing, but he went from corner to corner to wing before that, and that's what, you know, busted down Air Force's zone in that last minute, was because they said, okay, Dantley, you just go stand in the corner, and if you get it, make a play. They probably just told him to shoot, but he made a play and made an assist. And, you know, you can't play 1-3-1 zone with Dantley Walker on the floor. I'd argue you shouldn't play zone with Dantley Walker on the floor, period. But you definitely can't play 1-3-1. And Dave Rice made a decision, or somebody made a decision on that coaching staff. Let's put this lineup in there, put Dantley in the corner, break down their 1-3-1, and that should open things up. And it did. And so I think those 4 minutes did swing things, but I don't think it was just Dantley Walker. I think the coaching staff did a really good job of using what Dantley Walker is good at, or what Dantley Walker is known for.
So is this the Dantley Walker situation that we talked about a few weeks ago, where does this lead to a couple minutes, you know, whenever they're up against a zone and they're, you know, having trouble, is he a guy that they can send out there now to in a situation like that? Or was this a special circumstance because Air Force was playing the 1-3-1 and it left those openings, and that's sort of what allowed it to happen?
I don't know, because, you know, he made 1-3, so it's not like he went in for 4 minutes and drained 4 3-pointers. Assuming Jordan Cornish is still shooting the ball well, I still kind of hold that belief that Cornish is kind of shot Walker out of more minutes. But I don't know. I think if they have a stretch where they're struggling against a zone team, especially, you know, maybe he doesn't play against Colorado State. Maybe he doesn't play when they play Wyoming or San Diego State. But, you know, when they play Air Force again, when they play Fresno State, Utah State, or San Jose State, when they play some of these lesser teams, that it's like, okay, we should win this game, and they're not really going to kill us if we have Dantley in there on defense. I think, yeah, you could definitely see him more if they're getting zoned and they're not doing much against it.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. That's pretty much the situation we've seen him in so far this year. Sort of the lesser teams, you know, home games, a few minutes in the first half to sort of try things out against the opposing team that's playing zone. So those are kind of the situations, I guess, where going forward, maybe expect to see him again. But yeah, I'd agree with you. If Dantley Walker's on the floor, I don't see why a team would stay in a zone defense. It's, I would agree with that.
Do you think what Pat said after the game, just saying that, you know, there's more energy, and I think he said it's more fun to play with Dantley out there. With Pat saying that, do you think that means Dave should play Dantley more, just because it likely means his guys are going to have more fun? It likely means his guys are going to play with maybe a little bit more energy, a little bit more excitedness?
I think that Dave Rice has recruited a lot of 4- and 5-star players who may say that they like playing with Dantley Walker until it starts to cut into their playing time. So I'm not sure Rashad Vaughn or Chris Wood or, you know, those guys are going to be volunteering to sit out more to let Dantley get on the floor. He does seem like a guy who would be fun to play with. He's very incisive with his passes. He usually knows what he's going to do with the ball before he gets it. He's one of those type of players. He's always sort of, you know, thinking the next move ahead, which is nice. So he's got some good awareness. He looks like he'd be fun to play with. Obviously, he can shoot the lights out. I don't know. It's fun to play with. I don't know if Dave Rice is going to take that to heart when he's getting ready, getting his game plan ready for the next game.
Do you think Goodluck Okunobo's injury? First off, do you think no Goodluck Okunobo is the reason they lost to New Mexico? And do you think him being not 100% the rest of the year means they lose another game that they would have won if he was completely healthy?
I'm not sure he was the difference against New Mexico. It's hard to tell. Goodluck is a tough guy for me to sort of gauge the impact that he's had this year. Blocks a lot of shots. I'm not sure the advanced stats like his defense that much. He's a good post defender. He plays a lot of time with Chris Wood, which seems sort of redundant in terms of what they bring down low on defense. I'm not sure. I don't know. He might be better served being a 20-minute player or a more limited role or coming off the bench or playing in certain situations. I don't know if he's had that kind of impact where he needs to be out there for, you know, starters minutes against good teams every night. What do you think?
Yeah, I somewhat agree with that. Looking at the New Mexico game, watching the game, I never felt like, oh, if they had good luck, they would be winning by more. Oh, if they had good luck, they would have won that game. I never had that thought. But you did lose a home game by 2 points, and I almost think, you know, if you had a guy who normally starts for you, he makes a 2-point difference or something. So, I don't know. I never felt it that he cost in the game in New Mexico, but I've kind of had the thought, like, well, you know, maybe he is worth at least 2 or 3 points, and that could have swung the game. As far as, like, upcoming games, I do agree with you. Good Luck and Chris Wood playing together isn't UNLV's best option. I think they both do a lot of things, and the way Good Luck Okunobo played in the first half defensively against Utah was incredible. And, you know, if you can get that from him, you know, you play him as much as you're getting that. But we haven't seen that for 40 minutes, and I don't know. I think it might be a good thing because Dave Rice can play maybe smaller lineups and lineups that are a little bit better offensively. And I will say, I think that is part of the reason why their offensive efficiency has gone up in conference play and their defensive efficiency has dropped a little bit, is because of Good Luck. Because obviously he's a great defensive player, but in terms of keeping teams from getting layups, but he doesn't do much offensively to help this team. And what he probably could do the best is get fouled, and he can't make free throws very well either. So I think Good Luck's injury and his limited playing time and missing a whole game is a reason why offensive efficiency is up and defensive efficiency is down.
Yeah, same thing with the guy. I feel like we've said this before, but I feel like some of those minutes might be better served going to a guy with a little bit more versatility. Dwayne Morgan is the obvious guy who you might say you'd rather see playing when Chris Wood is in the game. You'd rather see Morgan or someone like that in there instead of Okunobo, who sort of replicates Chris Wood on defense. I'm not sure how much the impact those two guys can have playing together, Okunobo and Wood, going forward.
What's the last game you have updated for the lineup things? What's the starting lineups plus minus?
I'd have to pull it up. Morgan is still in both of the top ones, the two most efficient lineups.
Which is still weird to me because he has been so inefficient.
His offense has been not good at all. He leads the team in turnovers per 40 minutes. He leads the team in fouls per 40 minutes. He's been almost unplayable on offense with the amount of just turnovers and bad shots, and he's shooting a really bad percentage. But I don't know. I'm looking up these lineup numbers right now. If I can grab those.
I think it's been anything with Pat McCaw seems to be UNLV's best option, is get Pat out there and let him work with somebody.
Not counting last night's game, not counting Saturday's game. Number one, their most efficient lineup is Doolin, McCaw, Vaughn, Morgan, and Wood. They're plus 17 per 40 minutes. Second best lineup, Doolin, Vaughn, Kendrick, Morgan, and Wood. It's plus 16.9. So those two are pretty much the same. But they just... The problem is those lineups have played 41 minutes and 30 minutes together because Morgan they can't keep him on the floor.
Yeah, his foul rate is incredible. I know a couple games ago he was leading the Mountain West in fouls per 40 minutes. I don't know if he still is, but it was like at 6 or 6.5 or something like that.
For the Okunobo and Wood thing, they've got one lineup that features both of them, the Doolin, McCaw, Vaughn, Okunobo, Wood, the nominal starting lineup now when everyone's healthy. That lineup is plus 2.7 per 40 minutes. Every other lineup featuring Okunobo and Wood, every other combination, is in the negative.
Okay. And listen, you found out last week that UNLV uses five man plus minus in their decision making. So
yeah, Rice said that that's something that they chart that and they use in their own internal discussion. So I mean, they have these numbers. I don't know what to make of them. It's very raw data. Like I'm sure they have much more information than I do. I basically just keep track of the scores and the shooting percentages and things like that. But I'm sure they have much more data in terms of turnover rates and individual stats within those lineups and things like that. So I'm sure they know. I have no doubt that they know all this. But for some reason, they seem to like those two guys playing together.
Let me ask you this. Is Rashad Vaughn worthy of a All-Mountain West first team spot?
Let's see. You're gonna go three guards and two forwards?
I kind of hate that. I'd rather just take the five best, but...
Okay. I know, thinking guards, you got Marks. I'd say he's there. I don't know if he's locked in yet, but I think he'd probably be in the discussion right up there.
Let me ask you this. I tell you, Rashad Vaughn's the most likely UNLV player to make all-conference team. But Pat McCaw's been the MVP of this team, right?
Pat McCaw has been the best player this year. Although his individual plus minus is not as good as Wood or Vaughn, but I would say he's probably their best player.
Where does that come in when people are voting for Mountain West first team or any conference first team? Because Rashad Vaughn has the points and that's the biggest factor, but. If you ask anyone that covers UNLV basketball, any of the coaches at UNLV, they would say Pat McCaw is the best player on this team or has been the most important player on this team. But he's what, the third most likely player that would make an all-conference team behind Vaughn and Chris Wood?
The traditional statistics are the biggest factor in any sort of all-star team or all-league team or whatever. So obviously your leading scorer is going to be your most visible guy. That's Vaughn. When you've got a guy like Chris Wood, who's a double-double guy, he's obviously going to get a lot of attention. So those are sort of the numbers that stand out when you're just taking a quick look at your quote-unquote best players. The stuff that McCaw does doesn't really show up in those sort of traditional statistics. The defense that he plays, all the deflections that he gets on defense, the versatility, that kind of stuff it doesn't really show up.
I would put AJ West on my first team all conference right now.
I would not disagree with that. The offensive rebounding numbers are
it's insane. Like the hit what he's doing, not on the defense, like he's like a below average defensive rebounder, but what he's doing on the offensive boards is it's unbelievable how good of an offensive rebounder.
If he stopped playing right now, he would probably lead the league in offensive rebounding for the season. Like he could take the rest of the year off and still be the top offensive rebounder.
Like he's grabbing over 30% of his own team's misses when he's on the court all by himself. Like that would be a really good rate for a team. Not a really good rate, but that would be a decent rate for a team to grab 30% of their own misses. He's doing that all by it's insane how good he is. The only thing holding him back, and he blocks a ton of shots too. He's actually leading the conference in block shots. The only thing that holds him back is his shooting percentage. Like, he's shooting, 40% or something stupid like that, and all of his shots are coming on offensive rebounds, so it's like, Jesus, just put one in. But, if you do something that good, and you and I both saw that lead to an upset win over UNLV, I don't know. I'd have a hard time leaving it off just because of how good he is at that, and I think it's Derek Marks and Larry Nance are your 1-2. I would put AJ West there. I think I'd put JJ Avila from Colorado State on there. And then that fifth spot is maybe Hugh Greenwood, maybe Winston Shepard. I think a lot of people would say maybe Rashad Vaughn, but I'd be more likely to put Pat McCaw there than Rashad Vaughn.
I would put McCaw in that spot over Vaughn, but I think that Vaughn would probably get that spot in the minds of the media at large.
Does anybody have a chance at Conference Player of the Year besides Marks or Larry Nance?
I think it's probably down to those two guys.
Yeah, I think they'd have to I don't know, UNLV would have to win it out, and Rashad Vaughn would have to drop 30 a game for the next nine for him to have a chance, and same could be said for somebody from San Diego State like Shepard or J.J. Avila at Colorado State. I think
traditionally the way it's worked for the Mountain West is whoever is the best player on the team that wins the league ends up being the player of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of crappy. So San Diego State's going to – so Winston Shepard's going to win it then.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, that's the way it's worked out in the past.
Oh, man. If Winston Shepard wins Player of the Year over Derek Marks this year just because San Diego State wins the league, that's terrible.
I don't vote for it. Don't look at me. I'm not a member of the voting field, so.
Man, I mean, that would
Who knows? Maybe Marks or Nance will be separate themselves so much this year that they'll to break that pattern.
I mean, they're killing it, and nobody on San Diego State's doing anything offensively this year, so I don't know. Oh, well. Okay. All right, Mike. Anything else you want to yell about UNLV basketball?
Who do you think is the freshman of the year?
Do you think
Vaughn would still take that over McCaw?
I mean, do I think – yeah, like if I'm projecting what other people –
yeah, what you
vote,
think
yeah.
is going to happen.
Yeah, I would think it'd still be – who else is a freshman that's doing well?
I don't know. I'd have to look through the names.
David Collette at Utah State, he's like 28 or something stupid, but he's a freshman. Like, he's really old, but he's a freshman. He's doing well, but I don't think he's doing well enough to get it over Vaughn right now. I would think it'd be Rashad Vaughn at this point.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it'll end up being.
Okay. Have you seen off basketball and football? Have you seen the pictures that have been tweeted of the potential UNLV new football jerseys?
I have not. I saw the new helmet. I saw like some
the red helmets.
I saw a helmet picture a couple weeks ago, but I haven't seen these new jerseys.
God, Mike, you got to pay a little bit of attention to football, like 5%. Listen, these people are tweeting these out. There's a helmet. There's a red helmet that's been tweeted out. That looks pretty good. There's a black helmet that has the Hey Reb face on it that is kind of whatever. But then there's these black jerseys that go with it. And what's the picture that's been tweeted out, they look really cheap. Like, they look like they're not complete because it's just, like, black and it has, like, a red sleeve and it just says Rebels and a number and that's it. Like, it just, you know, it looks like a jersey that, you know, a middle school team would have. But everybody's all excited for some reason because it's like, ooh, new uniforms, these look good, and they don't look good
Can a football team in Las Vegas even wear black jerseys? Like, if you're playing your home games in 100-degree weather, like, you want to be wearing black jerseys?
Does that still matter with the technology of shirts we have now?
I don't know. I'm admittedly the last guy to talk to about like jerseys, and that's something that makes no impact on me at all. Like they, Rice, and he's mentioned at practice that, you know, the Air Force was having uniform issues, so the Rebels were going to wear their road jerseys for the game. I was thinking to myself, oh, that's odd. Why would he even, you know, think to bring that up? So then I just passed it along to tweet it out. And then I saw it became like everyone on Twitter was like, you know, talking about it, and it's like, so people like really care. It surprises me how much people care about uniforms. I don't know. It doesn't make a difference to me.
Oh, I love talking about uniforms and logos and all that. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta get with it. Come on, Mike. Come on.
Uniforms are
a big deal.
Style is not my thing. I don't know. It's one team's gonna wear one collar, the other team's gonna wear the other collar. I mean, what difference does it make?
What happens when two teams wear the same color?
I mean, does it matter who looks better? Like, if your jersey looks nicer than another team's jersey? I don't know.
It does. I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to win the game, but it means that 17-year-old at home might be like, oh.
Fact. That is true. That's true. That does make it.
I mean, that's why Oregon is worth a damn in football. Like, that's why. Because they have Nike behind them and, oh, they're known as the team with 7,000. You know, you go there for 5 years and you're not going to wear the same jersey twice or the same combination twice. But listen, you got to get with it, Mike. Uniforms are a big deal.
Gotcha. I'll start following some uniform Twitter accounts and I'll get caught up.
There's UniWatch. At UniWatch.
Okay.
They'll get you caught up with every. Now they follow like every little detail. Like if, you know, a baseball team changes the patch that they have on their sleeve, they're going to tell you. So that might be a little bit overboard for you to get right into right away.
What color jerseys are the Patriots wearing for the Super Bowl, which is being played a few hours from now when we're recording this podcast?
I don't know. I don't like the Patriots jerseys. I'm going to assume they're wearing blue for some reason. Are they wearing blue?
I don't know. I have no idea. I'll know when they run out onto the field as a team.
Okay. Well, you know before that. They'll wear them in warm-ups.
Yeah. Do you have a pick? Are we good?
Yeah. New England.
I'm going to go also New England. 34-13.
Yes, I hope so. I am as a Packers fan, I wouldn't mind if I never saw something that said Seattle ever again.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I know it's been a couple of weeks, but I'm so sorry about that game.
Okay. All right, Mike. Well, that's it for the Towel Boys here. Make sure to follow Mike over at runrebs.com. And you can read all of his stuff there and what I've got over here at Mountain West Connection. Thank you, Mike, and thank you guys for tuning in. Towel Boys.